This is Emma Burnell. I'm a political journalist, and welcome to the Zeitgeist Tapes. I'm joined, as always, by Professor Steve Fielding of the University of Nottingham. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Emma. Hello, listener.
But I'm absolutely delighted to say that this week, we're joined by Derek Perkinson, who I believe your title is the director of the New York chapter of the National Action Network. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm Derek Perkinson. I work with the National Action Network organization started by Reverend Dr. Al Sharpton close to 30 years ago. And I was given a position of New York City field director, which covers all the chapters in New York City. And coincidentally, we have four chapters outside of New York City that I also engage with. And also due to the day-to-day operations here at the House of Justice, which is the national headquarters for Reverend Al Sharpton and our NAN members.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me, Emma. We're excited to be here today.
Well, we're delighted to have you. So obviously, quite often, not always, but quite often on the Zeitgeist Tapes, we do try to cover something that's particularly topical. And really this month, there was only one thing that we could look at. And I said to Steve, we've really got to cover Black Lives Matter, but you and I cannot do this on our own. we're just too damn pasty, frankly. And a little bit too British, not that we don't have our own issues over here. But I'd just been on another wonderful podcast called Mid-Atlantic with Derek. And so I thought, well, it would be great to get Derek on. And what we're going to do is discuss three films by one director, the wonderful Spike Lee. So we're talking about Do the Right Thing, Malcolm X and Black Klansman. So it almost won a decade, sort of, roughly, throughout his career. So Derek, do you want to just give us a little bit of context about what it's feeling like in New York right now and how, kind of, bring it back to Spike Lee?
You said tie it into the area now, right? Mm-hmm. So if we go back, what do you want to go through first? Do the Right Thing was first. And Do the Right Thing, you had the Italians with the African Americans in the community, Italians owned businesses in African American communities. You had the police interaction, as you highlighted earlier, with the death of the young man that started the big riot in the movie. So, I mean, a lot haven't changed. And doing my research on Juneteenth that just passed this past Friday, the research shows, right? And I'm glad we're doing this today because you guys can help. You guys can help. You guys see the protesting that's going on. You see, it's close to 4 weeks now, going over 4 weeks. When Rosa Parks got kicked off the bus years ago, they did it for 354 days straight. So we have some time to go. But what I'm trying to tap into, the research in Juneteenth showed that in 1619, 19 Africans that were kidnapped from Africa was brought over by the British to the Americans. Well, it wasn't the Americans at the time. It was, whatever it was at the time. 1619 to Independence Day, when the settlers, the colonizers, broke away from Britain. This is your history. You know the history. This was 1775. So you have 1619, 1775. You have close to 150 odd years. Then you go to 1865, which is Juneteenth, the day we actually last day of slavery were free. That covers 250, almost 246 years, almost 250 years. During that time, again, I didn't even know it was different levels of slavery. You have chattel slavery, which tells you if you're my slave, if you have a child, your child is my slave, my property. His child is my property, so on and so forth. That puts in perspective 1619 to basically present day, Emma. But if you want to go back to the movies, we can do that too. And when people say systematic racism, we have to really take it for the words that we're using, systematic. The Founding Fathers were racist. They were white supremacists. The Bill of Rights that we live under here in America were written by white supremacists. Even in the first 10 bills, they're saying an African American, a person, a slave, is not a full person. It's 3/5 clause in the Bill of Rights, which cannot be changed because it's a historical document somewhere on the wall in some museum or someplace. They're not taking it off the wall to change it. So how do we do these things? We got to have a desire to do these things. That's when I said, you guys can help. The movement that's happening now, Black people have been screaming something is not right for years, for centuries. We have our white allies now that are in the front lines with us. This is what's making the movement that more impactful. The British can help in that way, getting on the front line with us to discuss the history. The history books does not speak about 1619 to Independence Day in a sense of the rape, pillage, and the things that went going on. So when we talk about systemic racism, we talk about reparations, all these things tie in to those first 19 people that was kidnapped and brought over to be chattel slaves, their children's children, the beatings, the rapings, the separations of families, the separation of the language, culture, your name, everything was stripped and robbed of us. So it's always been, you know, black and white, right? That's black, white. We live in a three-dimensional world. It's not really black and white. It's you have white people, then you have people who have color. Everyone else has colors. White people, then everyone else is non-white. I mean, in essence, there's no racist thing here. I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to put everything in perspective, right? So, and again, we could talk conspiracy theory, right? I get crazy sometimes. Reading the book Malcolm X 3-4 times, seeing the movie JFK put me in this frame of mind, right? If you have a couple, Stephen, you're a professor, right? You're an academic, right? Emma, you could relate to this too. If you have a black man, he has sex with a white woman, the sex of the baby is what?
Sex of the baby or the race of the baby?
The race.
I mean, we would call that mixed race here.
We would call it mixed race, but it wouldn't be Caucasian. Certainly wouldn't be Caucasian, correct? No. So now if you have a black woman who sleeps with a white man, they have a child, what is the race of the baby? Same thing. You would not consider that baby. So in the big grand scheme of conspiracies, right? In this big grand scheme, and again, I don't get wrapped up in that stuff because we can't control that stuff, right? So you may have powers that be, but you have an elite society. There's a small percentage of people that owns large wealth in this country, in this world, right? And they're possibly Caucasian, right? So if the races mix, they could possibly see the Caucasian race wiped out through breeding, in essence, right? A sort of genocide, right? I mean, again, Steve, it's far-fetched. It could be, but if you really think about what's going on from the inception, like, you have to take the totality, and I can't blame a race for trying to protect their race. Now, to kill race, you know, individuals, we're not with any of that. And again, these are conspiracy theories, nothing founded in that. This is something that, you know, I contemplate, like, why are things so bad? Why black, white, why is this stuff? And that's something I came up with, like, it makes sense because, again, if you breed races, one race will get eliminated. That's without question, if we agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was certainly, like, when looking back in history, and Steve will probably back this up, because I know you're a historian, Steve, one of the sort of movements was that kind of melting pot ethos, and then that fell out of favour in favour of black power and black pride, and actually, you know, not mixing, because actually black is beautiful on in and on of itself, and there was a lot of that kind of power dynamics I think is explored in Malcolm X, isn't it? In the beginning half of it, where he's chasing white women, straightening his hair, trying to look more white. And then in fact, it's very explicitly done in the barbers. He says, don't I look white? And I think, you know, there is, those are the strands, aren't they, that are running through this history of a movement that isn't that old, but has such an ancient history. And you're right in terms of the British history part of it. And we've been reckoning with that during this time. And there's been a lot of protests and daily protests here. One of the things that happened was a statue was pulled down of a slaver in Bristol. He had been a slaver and a philanthropist, because lots of them were. Yeah, so he put a lot of money into the city. Mm-hmm. That money was only accessible to people who agreed with him and were white, obviously. Going back to...
Going through something similar here with the Confederate statues that's been up for years. And these are people that was in open conflict with that's treason. They were treasonous. And they have General Lee statues all over the place. How does that feel to an African-American? These people are trying to keep us submissive.
And bringing it back to in popular culture, if not Spike Lee, I was having a conversation with someone the other day about the old 70s TV show, The Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, I love the show. They had a Confederate flag. I didn't know the history.
General Lee. And you're like, you would never get away with that now.
Yeah, but also, if we are slightly going away from the Spike Lee thing, they're in the 1980s, there are all these Civil War, big series, you know, the blue and the grey, which presented the South as gentlemanly, you know, they're kind of civilised, you know, they're all, these are nice guys, and, you know, we're just having a slight misunderstanding, you know. But I just wondered, because...
But Stephen, there's a reason why that was, because, right. Again, the research I've done for Juneteenth, the children of those Union officers, the children of the Confederates, the daughters of the Confederates, they all got together 1 year, and they got together 1 year to talk about their father's accomplishments. Mm. They didn't want it to die down. By the next year, they had 111 chapters. So they and these are teachers and academics and judges and people in power that was changing the history books and changing, literally changing the history of the war and making it seem like these were the good guys and they just put on them.
But one of the really interesting things about Spike Lee, certainly like in The Black Klansman, where he uses Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith's film, which was made in 1915 and is credited with giving a new life to the Ku Klux Klan, isn't it? And to legitimize, I mean, D.W. Griffiths was a racist, you know, from the South, and, you know, and the poor white folks in the South are the poor victims of all of this, aren't they? And it's the way that he uses films, his own films are putting across his point of view, which obviously it's a very, in one way, it's a very simple issue, what you've just been talking about. It's a very simple issue of good and bad, of right and wrong. But actually he shows how complex it all plays out in the contemporary world. But the other thing that he's really good at is, and particularly like in The Black Klansman, is to show how film can reinforce people's racism, but also his own films, I'm guessing, is what he hopes. It challenges that racism. It kind of shows some way out of the situation that people are in.
Frankly, he's going to give you a little bit of everything. He's going to give you something to think about deeply, like you said, intertwined in there. He's going to give you some type of message. And he's going to ask some tough questions and have some open discussions, which is great. The Black Klansman was a good movie. Birth of a Nation, the part that he added in there, I'm glad he did that. It was powerful because we were making gains after 1865, June 19th, the Reconstruction, we were making gains. And due to the, you know, the white supremacist, they knocked a lot of those gains away and in came Jim Crow. So they took away our gains in Reconstruction and in came Jim Crow, some more form of slavery in submission.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting, I mean, one of the things I like about Spike Lee most is that he never stops entertaining you even as he's educating you.
Right.
And Stephen and I get very, very cross about very right on films that are almost unwatchable. And you know, very, very rare could you say that of a Spike Lee. You know, there's always something to, and you know, I watched the three over the space of a weekend, and I was ready to watch another Spike Lee film.
Yes.
Well, you know, good. No, he learned from the best. He learned from Woody Allen. You know, he watched Woody very well. They're very similar in their approach, and the freedom that they give to their artists. So, yeah, Spike is a unique individual when it comes to.
And I mean, I think particularly Do the Right Thing is such a New York film, isn't it? And
yes,
you know, it's Brooklyn, it's Bedford Stuyvesant,
Blackman, the Jordans.
But one thing that he does, and there's a wonderful sequence in it where he goes around various sort of characters in the film, and they offend another race. From one of the
their perspective.
And the Irish and the black, and it's both exemplifies the melting pot of New York, but also the very, very racist way in which New York was designed to have ghetto for each of those races.
Yeah, we have a mayor now ran on a Tale of Two Cities because he knew it was a Tale of Two Cities. He made it economic, but we knew it was race. Again, years of being suppressed, years of being pulled over by police, were thrown roughly beat up in our communities, government giving funding to police precincts and law enforcement to go in communities and aggressively police and arrest people for their quota numbers. It's a system. We have to break it up. The prison pipeline, the school to prison pipeline is real. So Spike Lee is aware of all of these things, and he adds it in, and he'll throw a little bit at a time in there. And you're right, he doesn't force feed you a whole bunch at a time. Give you a little bit, and it's a nice smorgasbord of good stuff to just bite on.
Because do the Right Thing ends, doesn't it? On he's got two quotes. Because I mean, for our listener who may not know Do the Right Thing, it's one day, very hot day in the summer of, I guess it's 1989. Right. There's an Italian American pizzeria, but it's in the black neighborhood, Bedford-Stuyvesant, and there's all kinds of tensions going on, and it ends with Radio Raheem, one of the black guys, being murdered by the police during a riot, which the pizza
and,
is.
And that sequence, they focus on him for quite a long time in that sequence. And
Radio Raheem.
For a moment, yeah. I mean,
he's being choked by the police.
In this current moment, it was so difficult. I mean, I think that was the hardest part of the whole watching of the films, because you're just thinking, that's 30 years ago, and then I just saw that happen in real life, like not a month ago.
Yeah, because black images, we always portrayed, if you guys look, again, conspiracy theories, right? I watch a lot of movies, right, growing up, and it seems like the black character was always the bad guy. The black character, even Terminator 2, is the black guy. He was in charge of destroying the whole world. Why all of a sudden this guy with all the responsibility? In another movie, he wouldn't have been that. But in this movie, he's in charge of. But this is the images that's portrayed. So Hollywood, you know, portrays that. The news reports at night, they always play what happened bad at night, and it's always going to reflect an African American in some capacity. And if you do the data. Crimes of that day, if it was 10 crimes that day, one or two were African American and the rest, but they'll blow that up. So it's controlling the narrative.
Narrative,
and we have to change that.
Absolutely. Now, I am Do the Right Thing. I mean, one of the beautiful things about Do the Right Thing in terms of the filmmaking, and sorry, Steve, I'm slightly taking over from you in building the narrative of the day, is you watch the tension build as the heat goes up. And it's a wonderful, you know, it's both true of New York City in the summer. You know, it does get bloody hot, and you can see why. And you see it in London sometimes.
Just had 28 shootings over the weekend this past weekend. That's abnormally high. Yeah. But people been in the house, the weather's getting nice. It's been nice the last few days. It's been 90, 89, 90 something degrees. And it's starting to get uncomfortable. It used to be a comfortable 80. Now it's getting an uncomfortable 90, humid. And people, it was 28. Listen, Chicago had 110 in one weekend. That is insane. We had a fourth of that, and that's not like New York City.
Yeah,
it's not the 80s New York. And this 2020, we had 28.
Heat is really brilliantly used, isn't it?
The heat brings them out. It brings
what's happening in the community.
But Emma, a lot of people are not talking about mental health. A lot of people have mental health issues. Mm-hmm. We're not addressing mental health that people need. There's a lot of mental health people, and people in the community needs to know how to deal with people with mental health issues.
Yeah,
I've got three programs here to give classes on how to deal with adults with mental health. So even if you have someone in your family, you may know someone on your block, but you'll know how to deal with someone with mental health, and you'll know how to identify some things within yourself. So we have a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. I want to move on to Malcolm X, which I think is the film we've discussed least so far. It's quite
The book was better.
It's a very good, it's a really good book, isn't it?
Because the book, listen, Emma, and Stephen, the book mentions his sister. His sister was very influential. No mention of the sister in the movie.
Right.
How can you not even mention her? she was so, that's the reason why he went to Boston, because his sister. I mean, the sister was so influential, and they left it out. A couple other things they left out the book, but the movie was good. It was a good movie. It made a point.
It is a good movie, and it absolutely made the point. I felt the second half was better than the first half for me.
Yes.
I have a slight thing with not liking overlong biopics. I'm like, I don't care about your troubled childhood. Just get to the meat.
Well, I love the child. You got to do the childhood part.
Yeah.
You know where they came from.
It's on a journey.
You know where they came from. What made them?
Yeah.
You know, that type of person. That's the best part.
I think that a lot of that could have been compacted a little.
Steve agrees with me. He said, yeah.
I'm in my journey. I get it.
I mean, the thing about the hair. I got that from reading the novel, but when you see it, if you don't know it, if our listener doesn't know it, about straightening your hair, so basically you look white, or you try to be as white as you possibly can, and that kind of, that's really important to know that that's where he's coming from,
yeah,
and that's
yeah,
what
no,
he's
that's
reacting
I'm
against,
not saying that
and
all.
And we don't know that, we don't really know that kind of thing, you know.
But that's even happening now with models. You know, a lot of our top models, that even our top entertainers, look at Michael Jackson, they were bleaching his skin to be whiter.
Whitening,
that's crazy. Like, why would someone want to do that?
And it's huge in Bollywood as well. It's not,
but it's something mentally.
Bollywood, they're also bleaching their skin.
Huge in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Huge in Hollywood. Lightening of the skin, fair skin. These are images that are projected by.
There's an image of beauty that is supposed to be blue-eyed, blonde-haired, skinny.
Size 2. And a size 2. Emma, come on. Emma, a size 2?
I mean, I think, obviously, this is an audio podcast, but I think if any of our listeners Googled me, they would find out I'm not a size 2.
None of us are a size 2, to be fair.
Exactly.
None of us are a size 2.
Not just little 60 pounds. I'm not a size 2. But it's the images that's out there. So the push from the allies, we need you guys.
And the image of perfection.
All your ills that you are aware of, we need you guys to voice.
And I thought, again, in Malcolm X, one of the scenes that I found really, really interesting and powerful was the scene with the dictionary.
Ah.
When his mentor sits him down and they look at the different ways in which we've just completely ingrained black is evil and white is good. Mm. And then that's always going to be the dichotomy. I thought that was fascinating.
That's what I said. We know we live in a three-dimensional world. It's not black and white. It's more than just black and white. And we have to get out of that.
One other thing, I mean, it's possibly more in Malcolm X than in the other films, but the way that he interweaves whatever story he's telling, and obviously he's telling it about a real person, Malcolm X, but then he gets, I mean, Al Sharpton appears in it, doesn't he, as one of the kind of the preachers. And the film flipping ends with Nelson Mandela.
No,
for goodness sake, it ends with Nelson Mandela, who'd just been released from prison as well at that time in the early 90s. I mean,
27 years.
The way that he weaves, and obviously, some people would like go, what he's doing, he's banging home a message and it's all very crude. But he doesn't do it in that way. He's really clever with it. It's got all these messages about, this isn't just about the past, this isn't just a made-up story, this is about something that has just happened for real. Because even in Do the Right Thing, when the riot's happening, they're all chanting this, an incident, a race, some black kids were killed for going in the wrong place just the year before, and they were all, it was a real incident. It was a real incident. So.
When I was watching Malcolm X and the end of Malcolm X, and you had the killing shortly followed by Nelson Mandela, and what had flashed into my mind when you're watching Denzel Washington playing dead Malcolm X, one of the films that I grew up with was Cry Freedom, about Steve Biko.
Cry Freedom.
Which is a wonderful, wonderful film. The phrase that ran through my head is, I have watched Denzel Washington play too many dead black men. And I just don't want to see in 20 years another one.
But again, we're talking about systemic racism. Denzel won an Academy Award playing a gangster. He should have won one for Malcolm X.
Yeah.
But he played one for playing a corrupt cop who gets killed at the end.
Yeah.
Halle Berry, the first African American woman to win, she gets one playing like a prostitute or some craziness over there. So this is what, and this is what they want us to, celebrate our African-American heroes in this light. You know, I don't even watch these gangster programs, drug dealing, gangster stuff too much, that we're more than just that. Yes, we have some
in
our community that does that. But that's, believe me, that's not the majority of our community. By far, it's not. Mm. And that is what's glorified. So my thing when I speak to the children, when I go around talking to children, I tell them a couple of things, right? The main thing is we glorify violence. We get numb to it. And we get desensitized to it. We cannot allow that to happen. We cannot allow that to happen. I talked about integrity. Always carry yourself as if somebody's watching you or somebody's not watching. Watch what you put on social media. Don't put up pictures. If you smoke marijuana, nobody want to see it. Nobody needs to see it. You can't get a job doing that. So keep it to yourself. But this generation, everything has to be live and direct. And they have to promote things. And they get themselves in trouble by promoting these things on social media. But we have to just be more diligent. You know, Malcolm X was a true leader because he was, you know, he grew up in Ohio, but it was some KKK up there, and he saw his father pass. Come to New York, he starts running numbers and prostitution, doing drugs and selling drugs. He's running out of town. You guys got to check out the Godfather of Harlem too. This is good. Malcolm X is all throughout that. It's great with Forrest Whitaker. You love it. I bench watched it straight for 2 seasons. And then he goes to prison and he redeems himself. He comes out a new person. And he came out even more new person after he went to Mecca. See, when Mecca changed his whole life, and he saw it very differently. Well, he just saw, that's what I say, I don't see things black and white. Either Steve, you're a good person or you're not a good person. I don't care what color you are. Emma, same thing with you. I deal with people on that level. Foolish me, because a lot of people do keep focus of his last name is this, so he's Jewish. His last name is they Italian. They keep focus of that stuff. They keep, they're very conscious of it in New York. I'm not, I don't want to be conscious of it. I'll be conscious because other people bring it up. But if we look at people on their merits and treat people the same, I think we could get through this. And when he came back from Mecca, he saw that he was sitting and praying next to people that looked like him, that's white, with blue eyes, blonde hair, and all sorts of colors next to him. It's not a thing. And then it's this thing on social media. They got these two young kids. They're about 1, 2, 3 years old. They're running to it. One black. Yes, Emma. It warms my heart so well, because racism is taught. It's not. You're not born with it. You're not born a racist. So it's being taught.
What I think find fascinating about the development through the films. So Do the Right Thing is quite community based. It's, it's about an individual story of that community, and the systemic stuff is in there, but it's not explicit. When you go to Malcolm X is making an argument about that system, and he moves through his argument as he develops intellectually, emotionally, spiritually. But the argument is about the system is wrong. The system, and his response to that system maybe changes, but his diagnosis of it is the same. Now, what I find absolutely fascinating about Black Klansman is that despite the fact that it's a true story and a brilliant story, I don't think that film would have been made if Donald Trump hadn't been elected. Because throughout that film is peppered references to Trump. And we're just going to hear a quick one of those now.
I've got a friend, he keeps up with these groups. He says they're moving away from the old violent racist style. So that's what Duke is peddling now. It's becoming mainstream.
Duke.
David Duke, current Grand Wizard of the Klan, but he's always in a three-piece suit, never seen in a hood or a robe in public, and he now goes by National Director. So he's clearly got his sights on higher office. Politics?
How so?
Think it's another way to sell hate? Don't think about it. Affirmative action, immigration, crime, tax reform. He says no one wants to be called a bigot anymore. I guess Archie Bunker made that too uncool. So the idea is, under all these issues, everyday Americans can accept it, support it, until eventually, one day, you get somebody in the White House that embodies it.
America would never elect somebody like David Duke, President of the United States of America.
Coming from a black man, that's pretty naive.
Why don't you wake up?
So, I mean, do you agree with me, Derek, that we would
never... I agree to 100%. What's the question, though? Say the question again. I do agree with what you're saying.
Do you agree with me that Black Klansman, as a film, and as the film that it is, exists because Donald Trump is in the White House?
Because of Trump? I mean, yeah. I mean, one gives to another. Obama is the reason why Trump is here. Bush was the reason why Obama was here. So, and we thought at the time Bush was the worst president we ever seen in our life.
Right?
At the time, we thought we'd never see anything like Bush. And look at Donald Trump. And he has no care in the world. Mm. So I agree with you 100%.
Now, Steve, I know that Black Klansman's one of your absolute favorites. You've been raving about it to me for ages now.
Oh, that we should do it. Yeah. I mean, I actually saw it in the cinema for the first time.
I'm so
everybody
sorry.
Was laughing. I mean,
to do it was wonderful.
When the Ku Klux Klan got blown up, everyone was laughing. I mean, I'm not quite sure they should have been laughing, but it was actually quite a comic death, really, wasn't it? It really was quite comic.
It was just brilliant.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they cocked it up. They completely cocked it up. But what I wondered about Black Klansman is it and Malcolm X as well, but also at the very end of Do the Right Thing, because at the very end of Do the Right Thing, there's a quote from Martin Luther King, which is basically about, you know, we should achieve change through peace, not violence. It's a big thing about not being violent. And then, but at the same time, there's Malcolm X, who says that violence, in terms of if you're defending yourself as self-defense, is completely reasonable and you should, you know, you'd be a fool not to, but not to be aggressive. So that actually ends Do the Right Thing. So I guess the question is posed then, well, what is the right thing? You know, is it one or the other, or is it sort of both? And then with Malcolm X, of course, you know, Malcolm X has his kind of epiphany at Mecca where he realizes, you know, black, white, it shouldn't be a sort of exclusionary race war, you know, all of that. He comes out with a more complicated, more nuanced understanding of what we're meant to do. And then you got Black Klansman, where Ron is having these debates with his girlfriend. You know, he's working through the police for change, through the institutions, and she's saying, no, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Are you a pig? You're a pig.
Yeah, you're a pig. No, I'm not a pig. I'm a cop. And
she
so...
that too. Every time she said, what?
No, I'm not a pig. No, I'm not a pig. But these films, are, I mean, it's like Spike Lee is... He hasn't really got a solution, but he's got... You know, these are the dilemmas, but... Does he have a solution, or is he just posing these dilemmas?
I mean, I'm sure he has some thoughts on what he, everybody, you know, how he likes to see things.
Yeah.
Spike is very unique. I mean, he knows he's up on the times. Him and Rev is very close, and they grew up in the 60s. If you grew up in the 50s, 60s, you look at things much different. You're very aware and conscious, man. I wanted to say something about Spike Lee. I just lost my thought, but yeah, man, yeah. The Black Klansman, that's one of his best movies. The only thing about Spike Lee, he doesn't do enough work, man. He needs to do more stuff. You know, he'll take off 3, 4 years, 5 years to come back with something. He needs to be a little more consistent and get some stuff out there. I would love to see a sitcom with him.
Right.
Some comedy with some good stuff in there, sort of like Blackish. But Spike is good, man. Now, you know, he looks out for the people. But Spike is also part of the problem, right? When we look at systemic racism and him sitting at courtside at every basketball game and acting, jumping up and down, acting in the manner, you know, having fun. I mean, again, it's sport. I love basketball. Don't get me wrong. I miss basketball. I love sports. But it's sort of like, you know, slavery, they put you up there with a bid, a dollar, whatever. You know, look at this. They take the clothing items off you to see the product and make sure you're fit and healthy and stuff like that. The athletics is like that too. Sports, they go in there basically butt naked, shorts on. They weigh you. They get your blood type. They get everything on you. And you're basically selling your soul, you know, to the league. And then you're controlled on. You have to be here, practice. You have to be here, shoot around. You have to be here, walk through. Their time is structured, and they have to be there. So when you look at it as a job, it's sort of a job because you're getting paid a lot. However, is it really a job? And then what are these corporations doing for our community? Mm. A lot of them are not getting back. Jerry Jones, Dallas Cowboys, on the quiet, on the race thing. Charles Dolan been quiet. Jim Dolan been quiet on the race thing with the New York Knicks. So these are the people that are there that we need to bring to the table. We need to, again, our white allies need to speak up and say racism is bad. Yeah. If somebody can't say racism is bad, they're probably a racist.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and even if you can say racism is bad, you are still benefiting from a racist system. Mm. You know, I can stand up and say racism is bad as many times as I want to, and I will. Of course I will. You know, I've been brought up...
Any condition, you have to first acknowledge it.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Now we have worldwide acknowledgement, because a lot of our allies are on the front, and they've been saying the same thing you said. It was a young lady that wrote an article. Did you guys read it? White Privilege? Did you guys read it yet?
I don't know if I've seen that. It depends where
it's called. White Privilege. Hold on, I'm going to email it to you. It's called White Privilege. Everyone's talking about it.
I will have a look. I mean, yeah, I mean, White Privilege is...
A white lady talking about how white's been benefiting all this time.
Oh, yeah.
You guys don't want to hear it. White fragility.
White Fragility. Oh, yeah, there's a book, isn't it? Yeah, no, it's supposed to be amazing. It's on the list.
It's written by D'Angelo. What's the girl's name?
There's a book over here that if you haven't read, I strongly recommend, called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race, by a fantastic author called Renée Edo-Lodge, which it really goes into all of those issues. And it's a British perspective, but it might be interesting to you. So I highly recommend that. I need to wrap this up because we are overrunning.
Yes.
I just wanted to end just on a reflection on Black Klansman, which is largely a comedy. I mean, it's played as a comedy to a large extent, as in lots and lots of fun anti-Trump references. It's very odd to see the lad that you last saw playing the young boy in that 70s show as David Duke.
Yeah.
But as usual, Spike Lee finds a way to smack you in the face whilst keeping you laughing. And this sequence about
the
birth of a nation and the death of the lynching of a man, you know, shortly after that. So incredibly powerful. And that in many ways was why people were laughing and cheering at the deaths of three people at the end of the film. Because frankly, by that point, you were like, you absolutely bloody deserve it.
Yeah, true.
Right now we're still fighting to get a law passed, even to make lynching a felony.
Really?
Yeah.
Lynching is still not illegal.
It's not illegal.
This is what I'm saying, Stephen.
Jeez.
Some of this stuff is common sense. Hanging people should not be.
It's moral sense.
It shouldn't be. No. I mean, and this is what we're fighting for now. This is the type of stuff we're fighting for. And we shouldn't have to fight for things like this.
Well, Derek, we wish you...
We need your help. We need our friends' help.
Anything we can do. I mean, as I say, we have been... There have been protests over here. We've been part of it. I've donated to a brilliant charity called Black Minds Matter, which is about black mental health, something you were raising earlier. So anything that can be done, you know, call on us. And I just want to thank you so much for...
Well, thanks for having me.
It's been a fantastic sort of roam through the history of Spike Lee and the history of the civil rights movement, which is... exactly what we were after, I think.
Definitely. Have me back anytime. I'll come back. Thank you, guys. Anytime you're in America, please look me up.
You and I are going to have
to say hi.
But beer authority, you,
me,
and
Colton. On me. Have a good one, guys.
Right. See you. Bye.
This leads me to say.
One thing. If you guys want to get in touch with me, the followers.
Oh, yeah. Where can people find you, Derek?
I'm at on Twitter and Instagram at DPERK Media LLC. DPERK. Media, MEDIA LLC. And on Facebook, I'm DPERK, DEE/PERK, PERK, DPERK.
We can put that on the webpage.
Yeah, I appreciate that, guys. I need some more followers. Thank you.
Well, just behoves me to say thank you very much to our guest this week, Derek Perkins.
Keep in touch, and I'm looking forward to my book.
Absolutely. And just to say that this has been a Political Human production, and thank you to Lord Stuart Wood of Anfield for our theme tune.